Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Explicit Measures Podcast. This is Mike, Tommy, and Seth on the correct URL streaming link today. I got up a little early, turned on the computer, just let it sit around. Maybe it's something on my machine. I don't get up early enough and hit go on some of this stuff. So here we go. Starting off the stream today. Thank you for your YouTube being funny to us. We were laughing. Someone was commenting. I don't see the comment yet, but Seth was noting someone on YouTube was saying, is this the real stream? We'll find out in the next couple minutes. Is this the real link? So
indeed, technologically speaking, it's a happy Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's amazing when something that should work makes me so excited.
We literally, there's a little green square or red square that shows up in OBS where we stream from. And it's either red or green. It's, you know, one or the other. And so this morning I was like, green square. And everyone, and the crowd goes, yay.
Hey, man, you know, in the land of warts, right? Like in technology, I don't know if you guys have been there, but you guys also know my life, right? In
True.
Terms of work. Like you get in this realm where everything's broken all the time, right? Everything's just not working right. But the reality is like that's just your microcosm. You're fixing things all the time.
Yes.
So when things go right, hey man, take the wins. Right?
I know, right?
Just like this morning, just like the link, just hey, you know, don't take everything for granted. Just
it worked.
Put a smile on your face because it worked.
That is a true statement. Bask in the wins a little bit, right? You make sure you actually spend some time enjoying them, as opposed to always looking for the next issue. Because
if you don't have any wins, reevaluate what's a win.
That's fair statement. Wise words from Seth.
Ways to stay sane.
Yeah, exactly. So any kind of rough announcements, intros here? There's a Tabular Editor 3 debugger has been announced in beta mode. Is that right? Is that on beta or is that an initial release? Yeah.
It's a live in version 3.2, so I'll put the link in on YouTube and it'll be on the podcast. So there's a big demo on this on YouTube. I think Reed Havens did this in December, but it's pretty amazing basically with a DAX query, what it can do, or even in the pivot grid. So I haven't played around in depth with it, but it is something to look at in terms of, man, I wish I could see what the evaluation context is and the filter context and what's affecting that number. Daniel Orkert's basically right on what needs to be available. So this is huge.
Yeah, this is a really good solution for a tool. Again, I will also note that this is, we're actually asking for the links. I'm going to go get the DAX debugger link here. I'll throw it in LinkedIn. The debugger link. And so this is a very strong tool. I will admit that Tabular Editor 2 is out and free. You can go get that one and download it, use it today. It does have a little bit of a limited feature set, but the actual DEX Tabular Editor 3 is a paid tool. And so we recommend, I use it all the time, every day. It is the way that I use to model data, and the features that are coming out are incredible and very, you know, I would say a pro tool type thing, right? If you're a pro, if you're doing a lot of DAX, if this is your daily life, yeah, this is what you should be using. So thoroughly enjoy that tool. Very excited about the feature. I regrettably, like Seth, have been swamped with work. So I haven't had time to explore all these fun extra things, particularly the DAX debugger. So that's on my to-do list. Any other kind of really good announcements? We got some events coming up this evening.
Yeah, well, the goal today is to be two for two with good links. So
Today
is the Chicago-Milwaukee Power BI User Group. Tonight, 6 p.m. Central. If you want to join live, we'll do the normal kind of agenda where we'll do the live session on YouTube, and then we'll kind of jump on. I think today we're going to have a lot of discussion about the topic, which will be a first.
Yes.
Because usually everyone who jumps on the Teams call, it might be for 5 minutes on whatever the topic was and jumps. I think this one is going to be about the session. So, and I'm really excited because I put myself out there a few months ago to put a session together for this, but it's all about goals, man. It's scorecards and goals.
Love it.
And so...
There's also some data you're trying to collect. So if anyone wants to participate in this, and if anyone wants to be able to help Tommy's presentation tonight, you know, if it is, I mean, you very rarely can you even make it any better. I mean, it's probably going to be already incredible the way it is. But Tommy would like you to help participate in a different form. It's a Teams form or an office form.
It will take a minute to fill out. So I just put on YouTube and LinkedIn, fill it out because that will be used in today in the session today.
Yeah. You know, which of the three members in the Explicit Mentor podcast do you like the most? who has the best ideas and insights?
Right. Where is this poll? In the multiple platforms, because you know,
Seth just perked
Michael,
up.
Michael just throw in, you know, six of his user accounts, and
this is an anonymous, so go crazy. So, but so just fill that out. I try to spread it out because I'm trying to collect as much as I can just to show basically how this integrates with goals. But no,
awesome.
The premise is basically not some. It's obviously how to use it, but. Because there's been a lot of lack of engagement with the scorecards, like there's only really been one source. I think like Marquee Insights has been the only one talking about it.
Yep.
Or any content. It's like there's got to be a reason for that. So the premise is let me sell you on it.
Yeah, because no one uses it.
Right.
I'm gonna have to go back to episode 43 where we talked about this and listen to it, because I distinctly remember being made fun of, because I was like, goals, yeah, goals are good. And I think it was Mike.
Oh yeah, I'm still making fun of both of you guys.
So I can't wait for it, Tommy. It's evolved from where it was. You know,
yeah. It's gotten a lot better.
A lot of new feature poured into it. So
I've stayed consistent since
bring it home, buddy. Bring it home.
So since it's been released,
I'll be honest. I haven't had time to play with them as much as I should have. There's been features changing with them. They're getting better.
Ooh.
So I might have to change my tune.
My big organizational goals for the year are rolling out right now. Maybe I
roll them into this year and
see how it works out for me.
Maybe this is very timely, Tommy, that you're doing goals.
It's perfect. It's perfect. Yeah.
Beginning of the year.
Yep.
That was the plan the whole time.
Yeah, it was.
So good.
Speaking of our last episode on like your speaking engagements. I did a version of this for the Seattle user group last week, and I watched it just to see, because it's the first time I've done this presentation. It was one of those, like, I'm yelling at myself. Or like, you know, you're just like, I seriously like kept going, and in the conversation, I was like, son of a, stop it. So yeah, it's hard to watch.
Yelling
yourself.
At a video of yourself.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I hated myself. Yeah. Yeah. So
it's good though.
It never ends.
It helps you refine a little bit. Yeah. And again, it's like one of these things where you can't fix everything all at once. Always just pick one or two things you're going to try to fix and adjust and just work on those two things. And when you get those, you can always work on the next thing. Yeah, I like it. I think it's good. Well, let's get onto our real topic for the day. So today's topic is, are you building too much interactivity into your reports? This sounds like a very niche topic. just going to say it. But I'm doing this a lot more now. So I'm changing how I build reports here. I guess these the initial versions of reports, and trying to make them easier and simpler to use. So let's jump in there. Let's just kind of talk about what does this mean? Let's talk about maybe we should start with kind of just a baseline here a little bit. What do you mean by visual interactivity? Let's just talk. Let me start there. Let's kind of define what this is, and then maybe we can go from that topic and say, what is defining too much? When do you know you've hit too much, and kind of, you know, backing off there a little bit? Tommy, kick us off. Define us for some report interactivity.
So we've had a lot of conversations about elements, colors, visuals.
Yep.
Calling it a data application, and you know, and totally all well is. And good. No, that's literally one of our labels in Trello for topics. Like, should we do a data application topic?
Yeah.
But the idea of like. The potential, the power of what the features in Power BI can do for you. And I think when we say the interactivity, we're talking about clicking on a data point to make everything else filter, bookmarks, hierarchies in a visual. So a drill up, drill down, drill through. It's basically everything that kind of, in a sense, is the report, both the layout and the elements included, and what you can actually, and again, interact on. Visuals and elements on the report. So that's kind of the premise. And we, again, everyone who talks about this is always saying what you can do and how to make it better. But I think kind of our origin of this was, this is all well and good, But what happens to a lot of us is you read something, you're like, oh, I should try that out. And mm-hmm. we just kind of add on. And there gets to a point where maybe we need to take a step back. So that's like where that. I'll start off.
I like that. Seth, your kind of opinions on that one?
I agree. I think it is a poignant topic, and I don't think it's niche. You know, I think it's just something that we don't realize we're doing. Right? If you look at it's an end user audience perspective, right? If I'm a user and my only experience with reporting has been Excel, when I go into a Power BI or an application, right? Unless there's an explicit button or a nav panel on the left-hand side, or you know, typically, you know, you're not guiding a user to understand that every one of these objects on a page is something you can interact with.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
It's usually a table of information.
Sure.
Or it's a click this button here kind of thing. And it's an interesting topic for me, I think, because, man, I just blow past this a lot where you're automatically assuming users know that they can, one, just do the basics. And the basics in our mind are how many of the things, Tommy, you just brought up, right? I have a bar chart and a table. I can click on the bar. I could click on a row. I can right click on a row. Mm-hmm. I can click on a header if it's available. I have options. Like, how many different base level options do you have on the page that a user can interact with before you even start adding all the fun stuff?
The bells and whistles. Stuff, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All the features that have been added. And it takes me back, I was going to say a couple of years, but to a conversation my wife and I had yesterday, because she's getting interested in maybe getting back into the workforce and Power BI. And
it's a good career move. I can recommend
like,
it.
She's like, hey, I'm like, yeah, if only she knew somebody.
Actively seeking workers.
She had that same question we got all the time.
Yep.
Like, is there any video? Is anybody doing like, how do I interact with Power BI?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is the beginning? What is the 101 videos for the consumer?
Yeah.
And because there's a lot there.
Yeah. We did a 5-year video series on like a how to just not build it, just how to use it. Mm-hmm. Like, and that was one of the things I think, Seth, we talked about a long time ago. This is probably 4 years ago when we started doing this. This is when we actually were traveling. We went out to Seattle. So I know it's at least 3 years ago, but I built a whole little 5-mini video series around how to use a drill through, how to
we were, appendix or, you know, like the thing we were adding.
Exactly. Right.
How do you use the interactions?
Yeah. Yep. So my thought was I can make a bunch of these little generic videos around how do you use a drill through? How do you use a tooltip? What do these things do and how do you read them, right? So then have a little bit of a links or videos inside the report that you could just kind of link to and say, hey, this report consumes these features. Here's how to use these features for this kind of report. And you could kind of self-educate some of, you know, how to right-click and use drill through. I mean, what does that mean and how do you read the data? Just simple things. So I think this is a very relevant topic for that from that standpoint. I will say I've been teaching some more classes here around Power BI for beginner users. And it's always interesting to me to like listen to what brand new people at the Power BI are perceiving. And so the one, I'll call it interaction that I use fairly frequently is I'll make I think Microsoft calls it a rainbow chart. It's technically a bar chart, either a bar chart or a column chart. And each bar is a single color. It's a color of some data point. And so one of the things we stress a lot when we talk about Power BI is color is important. And then what I'll do is I'll draw two bar charts, one with this rainbow chart on it. I'll you know, use a legend or something like that. And then I'll have another bar chart that has a single color. Inevitably, there's usually an overlap between colors. And so I always make the illustration of, okay, you see this chart has a lot of colors in it. This chart only has one. Does that mean that, you know, this sales, total sales matches total, you know, revenue? No, it does. It technically doesn't because the colors don't match. And so then I go through this illustration of like, you can take two visuals and you can have the colors match between them based on the same data category, like your product categories, something like that. You can have the colors match between two different visuals. And then I say, watch, when I click on the bar that is orange in the categories, you can now see all of the sales broken out by salesperson. And now note that this is the single category for all the sales team. And people are like, whoa. you can do that? I'm like, yeah, this is the level of like interaction you can build to reports. So then I explain, you know, we don't use slicers, we use this feature instead and use the filter pane and kind of get some guidance there. But yeah, I think this is a really, where I think I get myself wrapped around. So for visual interaction, right, there's a lot of new ways of thinking about how visuals play together. I don't think there's a ton of tools out there today that make it easy for you to interact between visuals. So Tableau, I think you can do it, but I think it gets a lot more complicated when you have multiple visuals filtering data between each visual. I don't know about Damo. I think Damo's got a pretty easy to use interface. I think Looker from Google's product is fairly similar as well. But I mean, in the Microsoft landscape, you build an Excel sheet, it's very difficult for you to select between different things on a report right. page.
And so this is actually, that's a kind of a great segue to something I've been thinking about as we've been getting ready for the episode. I was starting to look at like basically how many components are on things that I use on a daily basis. I'm looking at my OneNote right now on my iPad that has the agenda. I'm like, how many elements can I actually interact with? Obviously reports are different, but it's kind of the same idea. And if you actually look at a lot of the applications that you use and even your apps that display data, like your bank app or your finance app or anything else that's, you know, kind of a summary of some information, it's very simplified and your choices usually are pretty limited in terms of the onset screen or the summary screen.
Yes.
Usually go into another layer. And as I started looking at this, I'm like, okay, like right now, I think on OneNote, there's five things I can actually select where based on the configuration I have. I would go into obviously the settings, there'd be more, but you actually look at a lot of your applications kind of in that same kind of realm. You think about all the combinations in a report. If you have six visuals and you have drill through, you can click on any data point. You can hover over. Again, you can have the filters on the right-hand side. You can have text on the X-axis and the Y-axis and titles. You can have buttons and pages. And all of a sudden, I don't think we realize how complicated that is because, again, to us, we built it. You know, we've been doing it one by one. Mm-hmm. And I think if you actually start using it, like in your favorite app, put 20 more options on the screen, it would overwhelm us because, you know, it's not as intuitive to us what a certain icon means.
So an interesting, I think, question in my head is over the last, year and a half, 2 years, a lot of my focus in Power BI report building has been external facing, embedded, right? So UI, UX is a natural part of report creation, as well as usability testing on the report. And it's kind of been, it's been eye-opening from the standpoint that I don't think when you build internal reports, you go through that. Do you guys run, like, how many things are you building in your reports that your end users never use because they don't know it's there?
How can you track it? I think I'm building things people want to use, and I try. I mean, I think
we all,
right?
Well, like,
but,
right?
That's but how insane. how much relevant data do we ever get back that says people are actually clicking on these things, or there's actually data supporting the usage of these additional feature sets? I know most of the stuff I do right now is like, you know, some simple buttons, potentially some simple buttons, right? Some navigation buttons, potentially, because there's now the new button navigation. I feel like I put that in fairly frequently. It seems to help a little bit to a degree. I think that's fairly used. Drill through, I don't have any statistics on how often that is used or not used, but I'm pretty sure that the drill through feature, people don't understand how to use it at all. And even though I put it in there sometimes and explain it and actually add like a tooltip, and someone's talking about here in the comments here, I've done animated tooltip GIFs that you can put in there that say, hey, if you right click this bar and do this thing, you can go to this other page and see more data. I like that feature because it allows me to keep my overview page simple. Okay. And then I can write details on a deeper page inside the report. But I don't think people know how to get to it.
And I still think it's not a fluid experience, even with the button. But that actually brings up a really good point, Seth, where the other side of this is when we think of errors or failures or something's a problem in a report, usually it's because something's broken. This is almost a problem because we may not know if we have a problem with a report. No one's going to actively reach out to you, say more or less like, this report's too confusing, or I don't know what this is, and therefore I will not use it. What they'll do is probably just not use it as much.
Yeah.
They may use it because they're forced to, because that's the only place they're going to get the data, is that particular report, but they may not be using it in a way that's actually like to their best potential.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have to use that report. So we look at the use and go, the use is great. It's like, well, that's the only thing that shows their sales, so that's what they're going to use. But if you have this application or this report that has a lot of components and a lot of elements, again, it may not be a direct problem that causes an error, but it could still be a problem and we may not be aware or be able to identify it because we're not being proactive. So,
what's interesting to me, I guess, again, about this topic is 2 points, right? Our conversation starter of what is too much is base level functionality.
That's right? A good point.
We haven't even talked about bookmarks. We haven't even talked about drill through. We haven't even talked about like click into a different report, paginated, like any of the bells and whistles,
report click throughs, yeah,
at all. Mm-hmm. Right. Which I think, and based on my experience of how far we've had to dial back functionality in external facing reports with clarity of that base level functionality, I think is the poignant topic today. And I have a bunch of thoughts to share on it. I don't know if we're going to hang out with beating on what other functionality is out there that people could use or might overindulge,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
on a report.
Yep.
But I think we give way too much credit to end users to understand how to use a report, which is kind of our job to, I think, solve. Because if your expectation is somebody knows how to do that feature because it gets them the answer, then they're potentially not getting the answer they want, or don't understand that that answer is in this report. They just don't know how to get to it.
Mm-hmm. And I would also agree, I think, to your point, most of our job as report authors, I forget, there's so many thoughts here. I forget that we are experts in this area. Like we know where drill through is. We've built it. We know how to use it. We know how to make it work. And for us, it's second nature. But for someone who's never seen the report, what is the concept of drill through? What happens when I go to another page and I've drilled through? Like, what did I just select? What am I looking at now? Like, whoa, the whole thing just changed. Like, I think we have to have, again, we talk about this often on the podcast. A lot of what we do has to have empathy for the people consuming the report, because we want to explain our data story to them and just make sure that it's clear. And the more we add other data elements to the page, potentially we could be muddying up our data story.
So, and I think this goes back to, again, like I do want to ask, because not this is the thing I'm struggling most with, but this is one of the harder things to measure or identify, is how do you identify, or should we be more proactively trying to identify reports that have these, we'll call them passive problems. And I'll call it a passive problem because, again, it's not something that's actively hindering someone to using the report at all, but more likely than not, they're not using it to its potential, or they're limited on what they can do because, again, it's too complicated, it's too much. So I'll call that a passive problem. How do we identify passive problems in a report?
I'm not sure I understand your question around passive problems. Can you define that to me in a different way? I don't know if I grasp that concept.
So I'm calling this a passive problem.
Give me an example of what you think a passive problem would look like.
A passive problem is basically someone going to a report with a lot of information on it. They're overwhelmed. They're trying to get one number. They get that one number, they're out. Okay. That report serves a lot more purposes and can do a lot more for them. And maybe they're exporting the data because that's an easier way for them to do it.
Okay.
They're not, you know, again, they're not having an issue. They're just not using the report to its potential where they can do that all in the report. They just rather export it than actually use the report. So it's not, again, it's not causing, okay. Yeah.
So you design something inside the report, some data story that's there, and they're underutilizing the report. They're looking at it and going, oh, interesting. They're using like a third of what you actually built inside it.
Yeah.
They didn't even know there's a second page. They're only going to the overview page and exporting data. Right. I'm like, oh, that's and all I need and move on.
And they've seen it, but again, they're not like, oh, I want to explore this. They're more like, I just need to get in and get out.
Okay. Got it. I think I understand now. So your question is, how do you find passive problems or solve them? Or both?
I guess the first thing is, should we be actively or proactively trying to identify these? Because these are not things that are going to necessarily come to us, where it's going to be like, hey.
Isn't this a core, like we're talking about core functionality problem from the standpoint that the end user doesn't know how to interact with your report? Isn't that part of your, you love surveys? Isn't that part of your survey questions? Well, I mean,
I think it is, honestly,
how to use the report?
Has someone taught you how to use the report? So even a couple questions like that.
So this is my point though, right? So you're asking retroactively, Tommy, how do you look at a report and understand whether or not your user knows how to use it? I guess one is, I suppose you could look at whether or not anybody's interacting with the overall report, right? Which would indicate, is anybody using it? But right. That may not be, they don't know how to use it. It just may not be, you know, the functionality may not be the problem. It might be the data, or there's no relevance, which is why it's not getting used anymore. I think a lot of what we're talking about today has to be a proactive thing, mm-hmm. because we're talking about it. But like in general, like what are the things that you're doing in your report to make sure people know that all of the pieces you built into it work as you want them to know how it works? So I guess to me, this isn't a retro. Like you can assume I would like mm-hmm. that if you buried a bookmark and it's like this hot like thing in the corner and nobody knows that it's a arrow button or whatever, that they don't know, or you've never told them that they can click on something.
Yes.
Then you might have problems, right? But I think what this conversation at least highlights for me are the things we can do proactively to ensure that we don't encounter this issue where there's a gap between us and the end user. And if you think about it, like this is kind of relevant to our previous conversation on a high level with, yeah. you know, Matthew Roach, right? Like it's the divide. Mm-hmm. The report is that gap between what we are trying to convey to an end user and whether or not we conveyed the right message. And I think too often what we do is, or we build for the person requesting the report and then forget that there's how many people behind them that may be users right now that may learn from that person or be in the meetings. But then there's like ad nauseum, how many people behind them that get the report shared with them. Right. So if they're not part of that initial launch or they're not part of that initial, you know, here's what this report is and somebody's going to teach them how to use it. If they land on that page, how are they going to know what the intent of this report is and how to use that report? Did you provide them enough information?
Yes.
Whether it's an information button, whether it's, you know, a whole slew of different things we can talk about as solutions to this problem. But ultimately, like that's what you're trying to solve. The lay person who just needs to understand the data, when they hit that Power BI report page for the first time without anybody telling them what it's going to do, can they get the answers out of it?
And
I would imagine a lot of times we no.
And this is what I take a lot of this, you know, so if you look at like app dev or app development, app design type things, I think there's a very similar nature to this as when we build reports, right? The report is this is why I keep thinking data app is very resonant to me here as well, because if I go to find it, if I download an app on my phone randomly, just a game, a whatever, there's always like a tutorial. There's potentially a walkthrough with it. There is little help buttons along the way. There's information icons. If you click on something that's new, there's always like little tooltips that pop up. So I think a lot of, to Seth, I think to your point, in some of the reports that we built for your organization, there's a lot of words potentially on the page to explain, here's what this report means. When I'm looking at this chart, it does this. there's help buttons, there's information buttons, and they're a consistent form and consistent location on multiple visuals explaining why is this here. And I'll go back to our process, and this is something that Seth Kahn and I developed, this whole concept of like, figure out what your insights are. What are the key actions this report needs to do? Talk about those first, because then you're getting better requirements to know how to build a report. And then what you're doing, and now I'm doing things in workshops with teams where we have, we'll just spitball some ideas. Here's three or four insights. And I'll go in my dev stage, I will put the insight, what I'm trying to answer, on the page, a single page, and I'll build 6, 7, 8 visuals all on the page, trying to figure out what's the data doing, what kind of visual is the right visual. And I'll just kind of play around with it until I get down to like, I think this visual or these series of visuals could answer this kind of question. And then I can say, do I build a brand new page for this insight? Or can I summarize this insight down to a single visual that I could put on an overview dashboard page, something along those lines. So now I have this like library of, these are the kind of questions I'm going to answer in this report. These are the kind of visuals that meet that need. And then I can go review that with the person consuming the report and say, hey, we're going to answer this question. It may look something like this. Does this make sense? And then you can, from there, you can then further refine the report and make sure that it makes sense. But I'll also add, you know, I don't do a lot of bookmarks right now. I don't do a lot of buttons right now because I feel like it confuses users, because we're just trying to get over, like Seth, you said earlier, the basic features. We're just trying to get over, you can click on bars and the rest of the page changes.
Right.
Like there's some, we're a lot of new people are being introduced to this program and this hasn't become standard yet for them.
So I didn't want to go here or
but you will. I'm
about to go, but I can't help it. Because we've hounded this particular idea where we've always talked about the scoping and the importance of understanding the intention of a report.
Yep.
But unfortunately, I think this is huge to this story because I don't think it matters if you have great tutorials and you have actually, you click on a button. And it's just like, I know exactly what you're talking about with the app where like mm-hmm. something highlights and click this to do this
yep. kind of thing.
But if you have a report with what you're measuring is not providing any decisions for the user looking at it, where they're looking at it and there's nothing that they're going to be able to do. It has no effect on them and their day to day. It's not going to really provide any utility for them. And I think that's part of the issue where we're building like a sales report, like sales by teams, right? And it can be very general. So you have sales by state, you have sales trending. What else would you have? Like, you know, sales by the sales manager. Okay. But if you're during that scoping and that build of the report, you're not asking like, how are you measuring success or how is this going to help drive decisions? You're going to have those general three visuals usually that for the average BDM or the average sales manager may not provide that utility, even if you only had three visuals, if you had all the tutorials.
I would still start. I mean, I think that's a miss in my opinion. I think you always start with what is your action for this? I mean, their action could be simply, I need to click my name and export it to Excel. There's at least an action coming out of whatever they're doing. So I think if you don't identify the actions or at least the insights that you're trying to drive for initially, right. I think it's partly a miss. And if you're building, so I've done a little bit of homework on how you discover insights or how do you discover answers to your questions, right? There's this methodology, and I'm going to use my hand waving here for those who are on podcast, you're not going to see it, but there's kind of this, if you think about my initial thought here is if you think about a lava lamp has like a point at the top. It kind of widens out to the middle and then it kind of narrows back down to the base where the light bulb is. And then it kind of widens back out for the cone at the very bottom of it. If you turn a lava lamp on its side and look at how you open up, like, you know, as you touch a report, there's different ways you can investigate how you find information, right? You can start with answering a very specific question. You can allow people to explore. So the opportunity for them to explore in the report widens. There's more things or more questions they can answer. And then you can then narrow them back down to an answer, right? Something, for example, right? You have a customer and you need to know, why are sales down for this customer, right? That's a very specific question. I'm basically taking a very narrow pointed question, and you could also think of this as like a pyramid, right? That's the apex of the pyramid, the very top part. And then from there, you can go self-discovery, right? You can look at, well, let's look at the sales by product. Let's look at the sales by salesperson. Let's look at the sales by region. And then you kind of open up that exploratory range and say, okay, we're going to start from a very specific question and broaden, based on the data, the ability to find different answers to that. Now, when you do that, you leave it open for interpretations, because Tommy may say, yeah, it's all based on sales region. The sales regions are driving this. And someone else may look at it and go, well, it's, we had hired two new sales per people and they didn't know what they were selling, so it's their fault. So you can kind of potentially, in those situations where you have just a lot of information out there, people can get to their own answers. The opposite could be true. You could have a general information report. Let's say Microsoft did a COVID-19 report at some point, right? It's just, you start with kind of any number of questions. So now take the pyramid, turn it upside down. The wide part of the pyramid is open and you can kind of narrow down to what you're looking for, right? I live in the state of Wisconsin. What's the COVID rate in my area, my region? What does that look like, right? So I start with a very wide pyramid, an inverted pyramid. Lots of questions can be asked and it kind of narrows down to like a single point or question that I want to answer. So there's different methods on how you kind of cater that design experience so that people can find one answer or self-discover answers. And I think that's, you have to at least have that somewhat in your mind about how you're building reports, right? That's part of, do you want people to self-discover answers, or you're just trying to present information, or what is the action you're taking out there? I hope that I explained.
I agree 100% with that. Like if you, but that, so two things that,
I'm shocked,
that
though.
Solve,
I'm surprised
solve this problem. No, I think about when we build a report.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you're investing the time up front to have the conversations, we've done many podcasts about like the audience going through the process of report, how, like all of the stuff before you start building a report. You have the questions that you're trying to answer in that report. And as a report author, you have to go through that report and understand whether or not you answered them. In the same way, that's pertinent information for the end user that should be available to them, at least in an information button or somewhere from the report, that they can understand, like, hey, the intent of this report is to answer these questions. Whether or not you spend the time to, in that documentation or information, outline for them how is a different question, right? Mm-hmm. But in terms of like answering, how do you, you know, how do you have people land on a report and get no value? Well, don't tell them what it's supposed to do, right?
Like yeah, agreed.
And I mean, it's, I think there's the two core elements. And I think, Mike, you're spot on, because regardless of the three things you said, the end point was each of those things you're trying to derive an action, or there should be an action that someone yeah. needs to take. I'm reading this book called How to Measure Anything. And I know this sounds simple, but it's a good read as we start our book club, but
I think we need to,
it's a good book, but basically one of the things that he does for his own scoping is when they would say they want to measure a certain number, he asks like, okay, what decisions come from, you know, measuring this? And if no one can name like an actual decision or like what decisions have been made in the past, then clearly that has no value.
Exactly. I totally agree with this.
Because anything that has value in a sense can be measured.
Yes.
So anyways, so that's a little off, but if we're building.
No, it's not a little off. I think this is a very good, okay. I think it's a very good, I think it's a very, I think this is, to me, this is a very core point of why we build reports. Our reports are there to at least take some sort of action.
Right.
Because people, I don't think, are able to articulate all the things they need to do with their data either. And mm-hmm. one of the things I also find is data models are always seeming to be somewhat incomplete. There is some information in a data model, but there's always a little bit extra, a little bit more I need to append to it. For whatever reason, I've got 90% of the data, right. And we don't have the time, or someone hasn't put the priority around adding in the additional, you know, whatever 20%, 10-20% right. of from this Excel document, from this labeling, from this whatever. And if the larger your audience becomes for a single report, the more kind of one-off requests you probably will receive, because people are appending different kinds of data to that information.
And the other part of that too is it's not just a metric that is, you know, is important like sales or sales to target, but it's to the your audience who's looking at it.
Yep.
A good example is you could have someone develop the greatest, most intuitive chemistry app in the world, and I can download it.
Yep.
And you know, like the settings are great, the way they display everything's perfect. One, I'm not gonna have any value from it. I'm not gonna use it. One, I don't know what to use it for because I'm not a chemist.
Yeah.
And I also don't understand the, you know, in the sense the information in it. But I have no action to take in that chemistry app because I don't know what to look for.
Yep.
And I don't know what action to take from it. So therefore it's confusing to me, even if it wins design awards.
So you can look at it and go, wow, this is a pretty report.
It looks,
but to you, it's not actionable. So is right. What was the time, like, other than making something that looked pretty, why were you doing it? And I would agree wholeheartedly with this. If you can't tie an action or can't, and I liked your question there. How did you phrase it? You said something like, if you haven't recently made actions off of this kind of data, then it's probably not relevant. And so
if someone can't name a decision they made off
of
something they measured or they want to measure.
Yes. Name a decision you've made off something you want to measure. I like that question a lot because that really, I think, helps shape this such that you're getting out exactly what you want.
And you think, okay.
So an interesting, I think that I'm having while you guys are talking, right, is part of
light bulb is literally clicking on. I can see the Seth's light bulb.
Ready? Here's the after 30 minute thought.
Right on schedule.
Part of a simple report, which is what we're talking about. How do you simplify a report? Is clarity of message. Are you communicating what you want with a particular report? And I think the mentality that we are challenging right now, because we've all fallen into it, is even if we are answering some questions, I think many end users want us to boil the ocean. And that term is kind of like give them everything in the same report. And if we can't, the natural inclination for that lay user is, let's just give it to me in Excel. Give me a table, please, so I can dump out the report and do all this other stuff. And I think we need to all reevaluate when we should be building a Power BI report, or make sure that when we are building Power BI reports with aggregated information, it has to have that output that you guys are talking about. We are trimming so much fat off of the analysis, off of the time it takes to do something, like get to the answer. But I think we fail a lot when it comes to representing all of the work or getting to that answer. And people just don't connect the dots of how you got there. So they're like, let me go recreate it myself. Can you give me the table, please?
Right.
And it's like, dude, but how much of that is our problem, right? And that's a very real thing when we talk about simplification of functionality and report, and how do you convey the appropriate messaging, whether it's the data, whether it's the clarity of message or the objects on the page. There are certain things that help you as the report author bridge that gap, right? So one, make sure it's focused, or if it's a boil the ocean kind of thing, give them a table, right? Like, to the lava lamp thing.
Yeah,
it is a type of report like that. But I think there's a couple things that I've started implementing. And a lot of this is end user, but it does, like, external. But at the same time, maybe it's things we should be doing internally, right? Mm-hmm. So we talked about, like, how do you solve this problem? I think an appendix with the functionality. If you're going to do something really base, fine. Throw as much functionality in that page as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. It's less effective, right? Because an end user doesn't want to read documentation. They want to know what is specific to this report. You running through things, you know, test guides, or, you know, when you're rolling it out, do you have a process for that that eliminates some of this? Because end users are like, hey, I don't know how, but it's still less effective because you teach QA how to start using your reports, not the end user, right? Mike, you made a point earlier on using colors within the page is something that ties data together, but it's also something that guides people into understanding that these elements are tied together on a page.
100% agree.
And I think we result in this is like, whether it's external or internal, it is really fast to just put together, especially if you're the report author, how do you use the report? And I think those fall into two buckets. One is, here's the usability of functionality within this report. Like, how long would it take you to go, hey, my name is Tommy. I created this report for you. Here's the functionality that I built within this report. And here's how you use it, right? I can click on this object, watch how it modifies this, you know, table yep. below. Yep. I can right click on here. It's a 2-minute accelerator video, right? That lets a user go, oh, this is how you use the report. And then you have a separate one that spends time talking about the insights, right? Mm-hmm. What are my questions? Here's how I get to the answer. Here's this question. Here's how I get to the answer. If you want to boil the ocean, go to this location over here where I'm dumping data out into Excel, and you can go do the same thing yourself, or you can come back here and this is where you're going to get your answer.
Yeah.
Right. So we talk a lot about like purpose of the report, the question, how do we get these things down? But like the simplification of a report in my mind is, have we provided the end user enough information to use this thing? Not everything. And we can do large launch things, trainings, like all of these on a big level are really important too, because what you're trying to do is raise the bar of the novice user higher. Mm-hmm. So we can move away from base functionality, and 80% of your audience knows what a bookmark is.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. Better yet, they know what a bookmark is and how you're going to start using it in reports. Right.
Yes.
Before you start using it. So it's a training thing in multiple levels, which is why I think it's an interesting conversation when you try to simplify things. Right. It's not just reporting. Right. Mm-hmm. We talk about clarity of message. How much time do you spend? We just talked about presentations.
Yep.
How much time do you spend with like books of knowledge? Right. And you condense it down into
10 minutes,
into an hour, right?
Or less,
right?
Yes.
Or a slide.
Yeah, a slide
like,
or two.
Like Mike, when we did, like, how many books?
Oh, my gosh.
I read a lot of books.
You read a lot of books. Like, I was like, good job, Seth, reading books. I'm just going to make up stuff.
You condense it down to a simple message. And that's exactly what we're doing in the report.
Mm-hmm.
So have you provided that simple message, or are you throwing a novel at them? And if you throw a novel at them, they're not going to use it, or they're not going to know how.
Oh man, this is going. I wish there were more than five people listening to this. This is awesome. So I got two thoughts I gotta say, because I think we are right on point, which I was not expecting this conversation to go directly here. But I guess two things is, one, like, I don't think we realize enough the behavior of someone exporting to Excel. We go, well, it's a natural thing to do, they need to do it, but why are they actually exporting? It's because they're trying to create, in a sense, or measure the data in a way that they can make a decision, which
correct
means that the report's not providing that. So in a sense, they're doing their own measurement.
It's also, I think it's also partially a trust portion here as well, right? So if I can trust this salesperson sold this thing on this day, if I can trust that information, I can take it out and then continue to shape it into something else. And I think there's also a part of, like, to your point, I mean, I agree with you, Tommy, but I'm also saying like there's an innate, if I don't know how I got to the answer, I don't know if this is the right information.
So I'll say yes and no, just from my experience, because we've actually been creating reports based off of doing feedback meetings with the stakeholders and saying how to use a report. And they say, oh, well, we created these filters, then we export it, and then we show this to Joe.
Yeah.
Kind of thing was for his team.
Yeah. Yep.
And it was basically like, what filters do you do? And they basically posted a comment in the report, showed basically the four things they did once a week.
Yep.
So we basically pre-baked that into
report.
A report, but it was targeted for them.
Yes.
Because of their behavior. Because sometimes we also don't know the behavior of how people are going to use the report.
100% agree.
But again, it's because I think that exporting thing, try to meet with people, see what they're doing with the export. Don't treat it badly. Just say, hey, notice you export a lot with this report because that's available in the activity log.
Yep.
Can you just show me what you're doing? And then basically say, how can you bake that in?
Yes.
The other side of this too is, regardless of how much training you do on how to use Power BI, it is about that context. On the same token, I was talking about like the chemistry app. I could use a pretty, you know, clunky baseball app and download it, but I'm going to figure it out pretty, pretty quickly on how to use it, because I, again, have an objective of what I'm trying to look for. How many home runs did Aaron Judge hit last year? You know, like I'm already going to go into the baseball, like what is the latest Yankee news, right?
Nothing.
Like even nothing. Oh. Not right now because there's a lockout, but anyways, I can say that I'm not a player, whatever, but start baseball. But the idea is I can go into an application where I already have the context.
Yes.
Because in a sense, things are already measured. It's not baseball, so to speak, just like you're not just saying sales, you should understand it. But the way it's displayed where it's, you know, I'm measuring baseball stats, a baseball stat app, I'm going to have a general idea of how to navigate and in a sense experience it. So even if we're saying, hey, this is a sales report, they should understand it. Well, if the layout is wrong, and again, how we're measuring sales, you know, does not fit the need or the objective someone really wants to do, the report will be confusing, even if it is sales by a user.
But is that just a miss on requirements then? Like if you build something and you're not meeting the need, is that a requirements miss? And I think it's okay to build a report and miss the requirement, because you only know what you know. And people, and again, a lot of what my experience is, people can't tell you what they want in a report until they've seen it. So you have to kind of like get them started and say, okay, here's where we're at. Here's our starting point. What do you think? And then they're like, wow, this is not really what I needed.
Or they'll say, it's fine. It looks good.
Yeah. And then you,
that's the worst thing ever.
Don't tell me it's fine. I know there's things you can change.
Looks great.
How many reports do you have in your organization?
Over 200, which is way too many.
Somebody asks you, Tommy, what is this calculation doing in this report? Is that on the top of your head?
Tommy's got a dictionary for this.
Generally, yes. But again, now I think the better question is like, what's the purpose of that measure? What are people doing with that calculation? I could generally name.
Sure.
Yeah. Like I could find the measurement with the data catalog.
Can your non-savant people that work with you do that?
And that's, yeah, no.
Well, no. You have a data catalog.
My point here is this. We know every, like, the whole structure and background of all these reports because we built them.
Correct. Agreed.
If an end user has an interaction with 10 or 15 reports, they're going to have ones that they hit every day or use a lot.
Correct.
But they're also going to, like, are they utilizing the other ones because they don't know them as well? Or I should say, are they not using the other ones because they don't know them as well? Or because the information in them is not something that they find pertinent? My point is like in those reports, we're always like in our daily lives, I always have references. Like I always have to go check the model and look at the calculation. I always have. So if that's not there for the end user, I think it's important that we put it there, because even if you are familiar with the ecosystem, especially with the questions and answers of a particular report, that has to be something that's just embedded in the report for the end user.
I completely
agree.
Let me
recycle and, you know, and now I know the intent of this report, and it's reminding me the use I get out of it.
So allow me to clarify or at least spin it a little different way. First off, we always have a reference on what the measures are and we add our catalog. But when I say like, do people understand the measurement? It's not so much the DAX calculation, but when you put sales based on region and you put sales based on product, in a sense, you're creating it, you're measuring it in a different way from a business point of view. Same calculation, just a different field, but it's a different measurement, a measurement of the, in a sense, of ordinal ranking, the ranking of the products by sales. So in that sense, if that's not really intuitive for the user, like for the salesperson, that's not helping them. If I see the sales by product, well, I'm not really selling the product, or that's, you know, important. I rather see it based on the product type, because my goal is we need to sell more, we need to sell more bikes this year because et cetera. That's what I'm concerned about. And again, no one's going to say that in the report scope.
So I think you bring an interesting point, because in small companies, right, the report builder is probably the subject matter expert as well. But in larger companies, right, or as they grow, those two may not be the same thing. Mm-hmm. Right. Your subject matter expert may be the person that is asking for you to build the report. And if that's the case, that's why I was saying, like, having a separate video or a separate thing that defines the insights or the value that, you know, it comes out of a report, and the decisions that can be made certainly can be aligned with goals of a company, right? Like, and goals in general that you could stick on your goals, right? Right. Tommy?
Yeah. This is actually perfect for goals because of how simple, but anyway,
my point here though is like having that chain through the business is just as important as the functionality of something.
Yes.
Yeah. And oh my gosh,
there's so many good points here. I'm going to jump in one quick here. I want to give some homage to the chat here. Someone pointed out there is an episode around, so people are talking about, like, you know, spreadsheets and how those kind of like evolved over time. And so there's an episode on Planet Money on NPR, episode 606. I threw the chat in the chat window, talking about spreadsheets and how they were originally hand calculated on paper. So it was a paper spreadsheet. You would write it out on paper, you would add up the numbers, and then you'd write down the answer. So spreadsheets would do that. And so someone was making the note here, Excel or modern spreadsheets, Lotus 1-2-3, the computer-based spreadsheet is a tool that obsolesced a lot of jobs, got rid of a lot of jobs. But in exchange for that, it created a lot more jobs by this new tool that we're talking about. And I feel like we're seeing the same thing similarly in Power BI. And if you read the article note here, and this is how it ties into what we're talking about here, is in the world of spreadsheets, one journalist wrote over 30 years ago, they said, the spreadsheet is a tool and it's also a worldview, reality by the numbers. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's like the same thing we're doing with Power BI. It's like Power BI is a tool, but it is also your potential reality, right? It's a worldview. It's how you, the lens of your business. It's the reality of what's going on by the numbers. Kudos to the chat. Holy cow. Like my mind is literally blown right now with the stuff that's coming out of here. I'm learning so much. I threw the episode on there. We're going to have to listen to this other podcast and talk about this other spreadsheet one at some point too. So good, really good stuff.
I have one kind of point off of Seth, what you're saying, because you, like I said, you are just expanding the mind in terms of just sparking ideas, but you bring up a very good point about behavior. Or at least to me, that's kind of how I've received it, where maybe it's a problem in how we do our development, because usually what we've talked about and what I've talked about is have a stakeholder and one other person who helps you build the report. Well, the problem, what I'm realizing now, is you're usually sharing that report with maybe 50 people who may not have the same intentions of the report as the stakeholder, because maybe the stakeholder is the manager. You know, they're not necessarily in the seat of the person using this.
Sure.
I'm realizing this now. This is what I find all the time, where, you know, the person who's in charge of scope, you know, like building the report, it's usually the people under them are going to be using it, and they have to hack the report because that's not helpful for them. We usually say we launched the report, we're good, because the stakeholder looked at it, great.
Well, you're also trusting the stakeholder here in this case, sure, right? You're trying to trust them to understand the needs of his team. And if his needs of his team are different or slightly different from what he thinks there should be doing, right? There's this goal of like, what should you do and what you actually do? And potentially there's a gap between those two worlds, is what you're describing.
Well, yeah, because they're completely different behaviors and intentions.
Totally.
And
yes.
So, and he's thinking on his side, of course he's thinking for his team, but they have their own strategies and things that they're trying to do, maybe who they need to call or what they need to contact.
Yes.
Where what I'm definitely absolutely doing from here is incorporating in our report builds, like a month later, like a feedback review, and just seeing how are people using it, and really actively saying, where the report's not necessarily done once we launch it, so to speak, because we haven't even gotten the true audience is going to be using it, which kind of goes into if it's complicated or not.
Yeah, I think another part of this conversation, and we're nearing end, right, is there's a difference between what is simple for your organization versus somebody else's, right? If your audience is brand new to Power BI, you need to build different kinds of reports, as opposed to an audience that is very familiar with Power BI may be able to adapt a lot more functionality. I think the point in building a simple report is make sure that it's built for the lowest common denominator, the person who doesn't know anything. And if we think about how general workers work, they don't want to know how, like in terms of all of the functionality, they want to know how this thing works. And they want you to show how this report functionality works. They don't want to see a drill through from a generic video. They want to see it in this report.
The context of this report.
Because the context is only in that report.
Yeah.
So if we don't do that or spend the time, we miss conveying, I think, or simplifying that report experience to an end user. And how do you, like, you raise the overall level of experience from the lay users by doing what Chris Wagner does at Rockwell and many other locations where you hold trainings, where you do like these monthly, you know, how to's of Power BI, and you build the level of knowledge within the organization so that you don't have to all the time go to the lowest common denominator, I guess, but you technically kind of should. Maybe that allows you to add more functionality that originally you wouldn't want to add because they wouldn't know how to use it, right? Yeah. You don't want to throw every feature in Power BI at a brand new user because they can't even comprehend how this whole application page works.
Yeah.
You would want to convey the simple, clear message in a way that's better for them, as opposed to, you know, maybe there's a better way to do it in a report that requires more training or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think always shoot for the lowest, simplest way in conveying the information, providing that in a report, and ensuring your end users know how to use it. And then you raise that bar kind of data culture wise by having larger meetings, but don't assume that those larger meetings carte blanche, like give you the solve pass it on every report, because people don't want to engage that way.
So I'm also thinking here about your point, Seth. There's kind of like this idea of, so someone in the chat said, people want to know what's in it for me. How can I use this tool, this report, to get my job done? I think that's a great starting point. And I think maybe my approach here is a little bit around, or thinking through this approach here is, maybe I just drop out a report that's, you know, clear, kind of, there's always a starting point, right? We want to put down some information on the report that meet the majority of the questions. What's the large, you cover the major things. But to Tommy's point, right, you're talking with the executive leader or the sponsor of the report, and, you know, they may know at high level some of the bigger usage topics they need to use for that report. But then the people who are actually using the report, the other 50 individuals that are actually going in daily, they may have little kind of one-off scenarios. And so if I think about like all the, let's call it, all the information that we're producing from the report, we want to build a report that can cover like the 80%. You know, can we do that? And then can we also have like another group of this where we actually build into our process where we start covering the other 20 or 10% of the additional questions going on? I mean, that's would be amazing. So I like where that went, and I think that's a really good insight there.
I'll tell you what, anyone who's starting in Power BI and think they all have to do is just play with data is in for a bad surprise.
Yes, exactly. Thank you, Alex, for your note here. I'm gonna read this one out because it's just so good. So Alex Powers, who's not about the sell, it's not about the sell, and on YouTube says, Seth is incredibly wise with his commentary. Please write a book so I can turn it into a one-page slide. That's so good. That makes me laugh. That would be true. Let's write an entire book for you and spend hours and hours of time so you can boil it down to us. I'll just give you the one-page slide. Pay me like a book. Here's $23 for a slide.
You have 77 hours of podcast, man. Like, go ahead. I'm pretty sure everything in the book would be right there.
I wonder if I'll remove some slides tonight. Goodness.
Oh, my goodness. That's good. That was hilarious. Awesome. Well, we've kind of done it again. We are fully at an hour. We appreciate your time. I think this is probably a good cut at the end here. We had a lot of diversion around this topic. I hope we got some good answers here. Maybe Let me just do this before we close off. Let's just give our kind of like wrap up here. I think we'd have a lot of good discussion. I'm not feeling we had a good clean like end here. So for me, I'm going to give my last observation. My last observation of this discussion was really around, I think Tommy has said it right in our notes here, the liner notes. There's not a one size fit all solution, right? We're sometimes boiling the ocean. So we have to attack these report solutions as a, what can we solve right now? How can I answer the majority of the questions with this report? And just be mindful that you're probably not done when you build a report. There is additional insights that you're going to have to figure out. It's going to be a growth process between you, the report builder, the data you're given, and people that are on the other side receiving that data. So that would be kind of my one takeaway. What's your takeaway, Tommy?
I think mine is definitely realization is, we always have the focus when we say simplify. It's like, well, we need to remove some, you know, interactivity. We have, you know, it's always the technical side. So it's
sure,
the elements, but you're realizing that you're really never going to solve the problem if you never have the story or if you're understanding the action for the page, because no matter what, it's just going to get cluttered again, or it's always going to be perceived to be not helpful without a true action for that page.
I like that one.
So that's more important than removing.
Yep. Seth, what's your kind of wrap up? What's your key thing you're taking away here?
You know, in the same way you talked about, you know, we talked about presenting in the last podcast and how you, when you demo, explicitly call out the different features and functionality that you're clicking, you know, to guide people on a path to how to do something.
Yep.
I think the important thing to keep in mind is part of building a useful report is making sure all users get value out of it and make the effort to convey all of that base information that they need so that they get the value out of it.
Love it. These are good things. All right. With that one, thank you all for listening. We appreciate you. The comments were absolutely on fire today. So thank you so much for participating in the chat window. Our only ask for the content here that we do is for free. We enjoy it. I learned more from Seth and Tommy than, you know, pretty much anyone in the Power BI space, I think, at this point. They keep challenging my ideas and like, yeah, that's a stupid idea, Mike. You need to get better at this. So anyways, our only ask is, if you wouldn't mind, if you like this podcast, if you got some value from it, please just share it with somebody else, someone at work, maybe tweet it out, whatever you want to do. But if you found some value from it, please share it with someone else so they can find some value as well. Tommy, where can you find the podcast?
Don't forget Chicago Milwaukee Power BI user group tonight. Look on Meetup or LinkedIn.
True.
And just to join at 6 p.m. Central. So if you enjoyed the live conversation, if you are watching live, make sure to subscribe on Apple and Spotify and leave a rating on both. Spotify should have ratings soon, but it really helps us out. So we really appreciate it. If you're listening right now and you want to join the conversation live every Tuesday and Thursday, 7:30 a.m. Central Time, follow Power BI Tips on LinkedIn and YouTube for all the latest updates.
And with that, thank you all very much. We'll see you soon, tonight, or maybe Thursday. Who knows? Bye.